This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
It's mailbag time, and it's not Friday, it's a Tuesday, although this may not air on Tuesday for you audio people. Welcome to Fantasy Football Today with a busy, a jam-packed mailbag, because Dan's here. Hey, Dan.
What's going on, guys?
And Jamie, of course, is here wearing a hat. Hey, Jamie.
Good morning.
Thank you for not wearing a hat that was giving me epilepsy like the one you wore yesterday. And Dave is here. What's up, Dave?
Let's get to the emails.
Oh, come on, Dave.
No one cares how I'm doing. They want their questions answered.
People care about you, Dave.
People do care. Yeah, we have questions about Mike Evans. We have questions about fruit salad. We have questions about drafting both running backs in the same backfield. We have a guillotine league settings question. We have, a good question about Jameson Williams and more. All right, so let's, you know what? Fine, Dave. The email address is fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. That's the letter I, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. First one is from Rusty here. The first one is from
Eric.
There we go. He says, hey, Michael, Jalen, Mike, and AJ.
Receivers? Michael, Jalen.
Feels that way.
Jalen Waddle, Mike Evans, AJ Brown.
But what are they have? What do they have in common?
I don't know.
They're receivers, dude.
Wait, say the names again.
Michael.
Simple as that.
Michael, Jalen. Jalen with a Y.
Yeah.
J-A-L-E-N-Y. Just kidding. Mike and AJ.
They're all receivers who changed teams this offseason.
Oh, Jamie with the win.
Nice.
All right. When Dave was talking about Mike Evans recently, part of his negative opinion was Evans' poor performance last year, causing Dave to be lower on Evans this year. Is that you, Dave, or is he talking about Heath?
That sounds like something I'd do.
Okay. However, when it comes to Emeka Abuka's poor end of the year, we say, well, he was hurt. The O-line was banged up. Baker was hurt. I'm curious if we dock Evans and excuse Abuka, despite them playing under the same circumstances. I also wonder if there's any situation where we're doing a similar thing. Just look at these numbers for one guy, but yeah, but excuses for the other guy. And then we have a PS about fruit salad that I'll get to. But Dave, since you've been sort of called out here, what would you like to say to
Eric?
I would say that some context is needed when we talk about using the poor play and injury tag for Evans, knowing that he's way older than Abuka. I don't have it in front of me, but he might be a decade older than Emeka Abuka. And so I excuse Abuka because he played through a hamstring injury, but he's young. He's in the same offense for the second year in a row. He's, well, mostly the same offense, certainly the same quarterback, same team, all that stuff. And we saw at the beginning of the year that he's still an ascending player. We've seen Mike Evans play great for years and years, but last year his efficiency tanked. He certainly didn't move as well all season long, not just after the collarbone injury and the hamstring injury and the concussion, but he didn't move quite as well. He certainly wasn't anywhere near as productive as he has been in years past, and he's changing teams. He's changing his roles, new quarterback, new system that he's in. That being said, we are drafting Evans a little bit later. I'm not going to go as far as to call him a bust, but I think expectations have to be lowered for him, whereas I feel like the ceiling is higher for Emeka Abuka. As for making excuses for Abuka's injuries and not for Evans, maybe you got me on that one. I think that goes without saying that you can't say that one is one without the other being the same thing.
We just did an episode or two episodes on Beyond the Box Score on Evans earlier this offseason than Abuka, these 20-minute player deep dives. So I do have two stats I want to put out there that are on the top of my mind. The first one was for an Abuka podcast, but I think it applies to the Evans podcast or to the Evans outlook. On throws that were 10-plus air yards last year, where do you think Baker Mayfield ranked in accuracy?
Not terribly.
Last or second to last. Jacob is just on and talked about this. And correct. Is your other stat about how Mike Evans was like number one in separation score on fantasy points status suite?
Yeah, correct. So I think the BL end all of it is, do we expect Brock Purdy to put a more accurate ball placement on Evans, specifically in the red zone? And the answer, at least based on last year's tape, would be yes. So that's my Evans stat. And then as for Ibuka, I think it's really just the role. We went back and watched a ton of tape to do that podcast, and it's like they used him as a sacrificial X receiver, a sacrificial lamb X receiver last year. They're not going to do that this year. They've already talked about not doing that this year. They're talking about moving him more inside, using him as the Z, the move Z. And to me, that's what gets him going in the way that Ohio State used him and the way they used him in the beginning of the year when he was really productive, Egbuka. Then kind of at the end of the year, he's running these like vertical routes, these double moves, and Baker's missing him. He's off time. He's off target. I just think the role for Egbuka is going to be better this year within that offense.
For sure. What did you guys see for the role? What are you projecting for a role for Evans this year? Because there's some things historically about the 49ers that make me nervous. And then a lot of people are just kind of saying, well, he's just going to slide into what Juwan Jennings was doing. And Jennings had 9 touchdowns last year, which was awesome. But he didn't even average 12 PPR points per game. And that's kind of what Evans did last year. Are you projecting him to be in that role and maybe even seeing greater volume than what he had, than what Jennings had? Evans in the Jennings role, but with more volume than what Jennings had.
You know, I think you're 100% right that there is, at least for me, some nervousness around that. Like, is there going to be enough volume for him to be good enough for fantasy? The problem for like the issue for that for me is it's like, I don't know how much volume I need if he is in that role, because like you said, Jennings scored 9 times and Evans is a better player. So if Evans gets into that double digit touchdown range, he'll pay back that ADB pretty easily. It's similar to Davante Adams bet last year, I think.
Jamie, anything to add?
I think if you're concerned about Evans, it's really mostly because of age more than anything else. And the injuries that he suffered last year. I would just hope that the nice thing about Kyle Shanahan, he's been so good at adapting to his personnel more so than making his personnel adapt to him. And I think that's the biggest plus, is that they obviously mutual. Evan said he wanted to change and clearly wanted to be in San Francisco. San Francisco obviously realizing they needed to find some help, knowing that Juwan Jennings to me is just a guy. You know, I think he's a good player. I don't think he's a great player. Mike Evans is a Hall of Famer. You know, Adam, you've talked about this in regards to how wide receivers age, and the great ones tend to still perform as they get older in some way, shape, or form. And as Dan just alluded to, Davante Adams did that last year, even though it wasn't great across the board. He scored 14 touchdowns. Like Mike Evans, if he stays healthy, is going to be a very good fantasy wide receiver. If he struggles and gets hurt, based on what we've seen the last 2 years, 31 years old now, you know, like there's reasons for red flags. I think if this was Mike Evans' first contract leaving Tampa Bay, based on what he showed, we're talking about a top 10 guy, you know, like in going to this offense, going to the system, being everything that he could be. He's clearly not that player anymore. So, I mean, the upside favors Ibuka, not that we're comparing the two. And as Dan said, like they're going to move him around and change his roles and give him different opportunities. I think just in the case of Mike Evans, like the pro Mike Evans people are fantasy managers are going to say, okay, he's got this track record, and now he's the number one guy in San Francisco. You have Ricky Pearsall, can't stay healthy. George Kittle's coming off an Achilles injury. Christian McCaffrey's 30 years old. Like, if Evan stays healthy, he's easily going to be a superstar.
All right. Okay, so that's a great bull case for Evans. I want to name some players. Can you guys rank these guys? And then if you want, Adam, we can move on.
Yes.
Evans, David Montgomery, Jameson Williams, Joe Burrow. PPR league, who are you taking first, second, third, fourth?
Burrow, Evans, Montgomery, J-Mo.
Evans, Montgomery, Burrow, J-Mo.
Yeah, I'm in Jamie's camp there.
Oh, well, what a shock. Took eight and a half minutes.
I've got Burrow, Montgomery, Evans, J-Mo. And Evans is ahead of all those names in our ADP.
Okay, yeah. Hey, what's up, Dan? Team Jamie over there.
It's not Team Jamie. It's just if he ranks it the way I rank it, I'm not going to, for the sake of ranking it differently, give you a different answer. Adam, don't rile me up this early. We've got a long way to go. We've got a long drive ahead of us.
We do. We have an hour and a half drive together. So I brought this up yesterday at the end of yesterday's show, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it. Good etiquette and bad etiquette from Dan. Number one, good etiquette by going to your parents' house and shortening
great
my
etiquette.
Drive.
Great.
And modesty, too.
Terrible etiquette by not offering to drive the second leg. Like,
I will drive the whole thing if you want.
You didn't offer.
I was going to offer once we got in the car.
I think honestly, hold on. I think honestly, it's actually better if Adam drives simply because this is probably what it's going to look like.
Yeah, I should make him show for me. I should go right to the back seat.
Is that Dumb and Dumber? Am I Lloyd or something? Who is that?
Of course.
Oh, that is great. All right. Also in this email.
Does Dan get the reference?
No, I don't. I've never seen Dumb and Dumber, no.
Also in the email.
Sorry.
Eric says, fruit salad. Why are we putting whole cherries with the pits in them in our fruit salad? We cut up all the other fruits before we put them in. Can we not cut a cherry in half? A lot of work, sure, but can we make a cherry easy to eat if we really want to?
Yeah, cherry pitter.
I have a cherry pitter. It's
the best.
Six at a time. How many?
I've had at least 100 fruit salads in my life at parties or bought them. I can't remember more than two having cherries in them.
Yeah, I mean, cherries is probably not the smartest thing to put in fruit salad.
They're never in them.
Because it's more challenging to make it happen. But, I mean, if you're going to eat cherries, just use a cherry pitter.
Yeah. I actually think that's stupid.
We have both.
The grapes don't belong in this fruit salad, as good as grapes are.
Wrong. Oh,
that's terrible. No, they're as good as they are. They don't work with the fork. They really are not fork friendly.
Do you guys put watermelon in your fruit salad?
Of course.
Sure. I would hope. Yeah,
yes. Watermelon. There's seeds in watermelon.
Yeah, you can eat those seeds, though. They're not pits.
Yeah, I understand, but it's still a nuisance.
Dave, come on. You got to step up your mailbag game coming at me with watermelon seeds. Dan, fruit salad is a hand meal anyway. You can eat
it's
fruit
a
salad.
Hand meal? No.
You don't have to eat it with a fork. I mean, you could.
And Ricky in the chat's a big fan of your take.
What did he say?
Oh, my gosh. You don't usually get profanity.
Tell us how you really feel.
All right. Let's get one more email in here.
Grapes don't belong in fruit.
I'm going to give you guys 3 minutes on this because we're up against the break. But this is another one from a guy named
Eric.
And Eric says, I'm workshopping a strategy where I grab both running backs in an ambiguous backfield on a team that's good at running and starting them both each week. Ooh. Swift and Menangai, for example. Do you like it? If so, which teams do you like best? Jamie.
Oh, boy. I don't like it, but that's probably a good one. The Rams obviously are a good one with Corum and Kyren. I hope it's not going to be like a Arizona-New Orleans situation where they're still giving work to the veteran guys where that could matter, where you don't get the best of Jeremiah Love and you still potentially get some of James Conner. You don't get the best of Travis Etienne and still Alvin Kamara. Like, those type of things would be awful. There's not really a team I could think of off the top of my head that would be like, oh, this is great.
I would say maybe, what do you think about this? Maybe in a shallower league, do it where you can start Kyren or Swift. You don't have to start. You might have better options, so you don't have to start Menangai or Corum. But man, if someone gets injured in one of those backfields, well, now you've guaranteed yourself probably like a top eight-ish running back.
Yeah, but I guess the question would be is if you're doing this, you know, so like this is obviously something that you're targeting. You're not drafting Kyren and Corum back to back. Like, what did you do in between Kyren and Corum that you couldn't get somebody else that could be still a potential starter for you?
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, again, I mentioned this on yesterday's show or Monday show, like the last 11 games of the season for both Menangai and Corum. That's when they started going. Now Menangai, it was 12, but he had one game without Swift. So you take the 11 games with Swift, the 11 games with Corum with Kyren Williams or Blake Corum. Kyren Williams was about RB 14 per game in that stretch. And DeAndre Swift was about RB 18 per game in that stretch, which is pretty similar to their ADP. So if you think they can replicate that and you draft them at cost and they're, you know, roughly RB 15 through 18 in ADP, that's not bad. I don't know that you're going to enjoy starting the other guy.
I think like if you fall into this unintentionally, like the way you want to do it is you take a standout running back early, hero RB, whatever approach you do. And then it's like you take the Jacksonville backfield or the Pittsburgh backfield or something like that, and you don't have to start both of those, but you have them. And then to your point, Adam, if it works out or it doesn't work out, but obviously if somebody gets hurt, then you're in a good spot, but you didn't spend a lot of cost on those second and third guys while you still have a stud. So like if I was going to really like purposely do this, I would say like I would take Kyren And then probably in the middle rounds, like Jaylen Warren, Rico Dowdle, Blake Corum. And now I have both backfields locked up. And I'm starting probably week one, Jaylen Warren and Kyren. And then if it works out where Corum is that much better than both Pittsburgh guys, then I'll play both Rams.
The deeper your league is, the more I like that idea. Right. And I would never go into a draft with the intention of drafting an ambiguous backfield. But if I got one of the running backs from such a backfield, I'd keep the antenna up for the other. And I've been saying it since the offseason. And Dan, it's up to you if you want to back me up on this one or not. But I think if you draft Cam Scadaboo, getting Tyrone Tracy is like beyond a handcuff. There's a chance they both end up working a lot. But I think your team, the Giants, are going to end up being a little more run friendly than you'd like to admit. And that means that getting both those running backs on the same team, you should have a starter each week. I think if you get Warren and Dowdle, I think you're going to have a starter each week. And Scadaboo will be expensive, but the other running backs that we're talking about, not nearly as expensive. When I look at the Rams and I look at the Bears situations, I kind of feel like they're a little bit more, well, maybe not the Bears, but the Rams, a little bit more handcuffy and a little bit less ambiguous, because I still think at the end of the day, Kyren would have to do some bad things to lose more of his role. I still think he's the clear 1A. Just Corum's going to have a sizable role that will be annoying, but not necessarily crushing for Kyren's week-to-week value. Whereas if Chicago really does split drive versus drive with Swift and Manungai, there will be weeks where Swift gets a lot of work, just does nothing with it. Manungai gets the same amount of work. He just happens to break a couple of long runs. Right. He's on the field at the right time. He scores a touchdown. They don't necessarily have designed roles, whereas I think there are designed roles on the Rams with their running backs to a degree.
All right. Yep. Let's take a break and get to the rest of your emails when we come back on Fantasy Football Today. We need help with a guillotine league. Ace writes, last year we ran into an issue. By the way, I think this is beyond just guillotine leagues. Okay. This is a problem in a lot of leagues. I could play the Fantasy Cops music, but I'm not going to. Ace says, we ran into a problem last year toward the end of the guillotine league. We had one player with money left and a few players with zero. The player with money left would add the top waiver claim players for $1 and drop the others. He would then put in a claim for the players he dropped originally with other players on his bench and continue this cycle so none of his players or waiver wire top players could clear waivers in time for games. I am torn on what to do this year. Is this just the benefit of keeping money or is it against the spirit of the rules? So it's just using all of your remaining fab to add drop players, put them on waivers, and, you know, screw your opponents. Dan, you're a guillotine league guy. What do you think about that?
This is tricky. I don't think I've ever run into this problem in my redraft leagues, my home league, or in the guillotine leagues. On one hand, I want to say it's part of the strategy of keeping your money, and you deserve the benefit of that. But on the other, I feel like there might be an easier solution as far as like what your rules are with players and waivers, right? Like, if can you drop a player and pick up the same player within a certain period of time? In some leagues, I know that's not legal, but it's different because it's not a free pickup. You're paying for the pickup again with waiver money. I'm not sure on this one.
File this one under legal for your league, but unsavory conduct.
I think the one thing though with guillotine leagues, I think this is kind of where Dan was going. Is like the strategy is getting money at the end, is having money at the end. And that's part of the game is like, you know, can you make it to the end and still have the biggest bank? Because then you control the rosters. Now, this is obviously something that's not the best way to do it because typically these things come back to bite you. But I do think that that's part of the strategy, you know, is that whoever has the most money at the end typically is going to be the one that has the best control of the board. And the difference between guillotine leagues and other leagues, you know, you get this probably in a fantasy championship, maybe the semifinals, but like, the rosters are so stacked. You know, that's the biggest thing is like, you may have this superstar roster and you can manipulate how the other team is going to go. So there's really I don't think there's anything you could really say to make a rule in place, you know, add drops and stuff like that. It really comes down to, you know, are you going to see this every year where there's somebody just doing that consistently? It's hard to say.
Yeah, I think it's rare. Yeah, it's tough. I think if you have a lot of fab, kind of can do what you want with it. Especially if you're not adding and dropping the same players. Let's say you drop two bench players for waiver guys on Tuesday, and then you drop those waiver guys on like Friday.
Right.
And then they are stuck on waivers. I'm fine with that. As long as you're picking up two different players, I guess, than the ones you originally dropped. I think I'm okay with that.
The thing with guillotine leagues is like, you're going to have, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, somebody's going to have one of those guys. Somebody's going to have the other one, and everybody else is going to be available to you. So you may look at it and say, okay, I'm going to ride with Josh Allen because he's been my quarterback all season long, but I don't want this other guy to have Joe Burrow because he's playing the Browns and they stink. And I'm just going to add Joe Burrow, but I don't need Joe Burrow, so I'm going to drop Joe. Like, it's just going to have those type of scenarios that you don't see in any other format.
Question. Do you guys have $0 bids in guillotine leagues?
The ones that I've played in, and I've done several different sites, is you typically do a first come, first serve after waivers gotcha. Run or fab runs.
All right. Here's a question from Jake in Clayton, California. Dear Rod, Todd, and Maud. Dan?
Oh, wow. This is obviously a movie reference.
No. Jamie?
No idea.
Oh, I knew Dan wasn't going to get it.
Wait, aren't you going to ask me?
I know you know it.
Wrestling?
No. Buenos Ding Dong.
Something far more highbrow than wrestling.
It's The Simpsons.
The Simpsons.
Can you explain why a 25-year-old wide receiver with this profile is ranked so low?
Okay.
He was wide receiver 22 in PPR in 2024. He was wide receiver 12 last year. Three straight years of increases in targets, receptions, and yards, entering his age 25 season. This player is Jameson Williams. And I already know the response will be, but Drew Petzing's offense only focuses on tight ends. Anyway, he's got some other thoughts there, but tell me how someone unproven like Luther Burden is ranked ahead of Jameson Williams. Wouldn't Burden's best case scenario this year just be what Williams did last season? And again, Williams was 12th overall last year, but this is why I prefer per game, just yes. FYI, because he was like outside the top 25 per game. He was 21 per game.
I've got him at 19.
In full PPR. But you, in a normal year, 12.9 PPR fantasy points per game is more like not even top 30. Anyway.
Well, this is the new normal, probably.
I don't know. We tend to do this a lot with positions and overreacting to 1 year. Let's see it happen again before we call it the new normal. But anyway, Jameson Williams, are we underrating him?
I think we're baking in his floor a little bit more into his where we're ranking him, because we remember how the year started for Detroit and he didn't even average 10 PPR points per game until the Lions made a big decision to have Dan Campbell call plays. And then Sam LaPorta got hurt. And that context is really important, because if you just look at the raw numbers, yeah, sure. But JMO had a great second half and the top 12 in total points, whatever. A lot of it had to do with what the situation was in Detroit. And unless you're saying that Sam LaPorta is going to completely not be a factor or he's going to get hurt again, I don't know if we can count on that same type of year from Jameson Williams. I also think that if we are going to count on Jameson Williams continuing to ascend, then we are all wrong on not only Sam LaPorta, but Amon-Ra St. Brown. And that would be problematic for those who are taking St. Brown with a first round pick. I think JMO is a fantastic player. I love the talent so much, but I think people are reaching for him. I think his ADP is just a little bit too high because there's such a consistent track record of him not putting up the same type of numbers when LaPorta and St. Brown are there. And last but not least, the question about whether or not Petzing is a tight end guy or whether he's just using the strength of his players, I looked into that. And on one hand, I think there's a case that can be made that Petzing does adjust to his players. And you can look at what they did with the run game over the last year and a half in Arizona. And you can see that they did make changes to that run game, not necessarily in terms of personnel, but how they decided to run that made those running backs more James Conner in 2024 than anything in 25, but he did adjust to what their strengths were and he went forward that way. Would he do that again if LaPorta struggled or got hurt? Yeah, I think he would. But this dude used multiple tight end formations so much that right. you can't help but think that it's part of the reason why he was hired in Detroit. And I think we're going to see that play out again. Doesn't mean Williams won't be on the field. There's going to be a lot of two receiver sets, but I do think tight ends are going to be a big part of what the Lions do this year.
Okay.
Yeah, I really think Dave nailed this with Petzing. And it's not just that we're going to see more Laporta. I know you mentioned that at the beginning, Adam. You don't want to hear that argument. We're going to see more of his. He was on 13 personnel before McVay was on it. If you look at the numbers and you go back a couple seasons, and he was using that to generate action in the run game. What I really think we're going to see is a more run heavy approach. And that is going to be aided by the fact that the Lions had a worst case scenario situation play out with their defense last year from a production standpoint and mostly from an injury standpoint. That defense is going to be better almost definitely this year. The game script is going to be way different than it was for the Lions this year. So I think the passing in general is just going to come down. So now it's similar in my mind to, okay, well, he brought up the case in the email. Jameson Williams scored X amount of points this year, and he's supposedly taken this jump last year in 2025. Well, if Laporta's back on the field and their game script is better and they're running more, we're probably going to see more of that version of Jameson that we saw a couple years ago from a lack of volume standpoint.
Jamie, I'll throw out some names.
Which sucks, by the way.
I'll throw out some names for you, Jamie. You got Jameson Williams, Mike Evans, DJ Moore.
Oh, we heard all over Jameson Williams. I think just the case of...
I'm sorry. He's last there?
Jameson Williams last, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. I think just in the case of Williams, it's... He's the perfect number three fantasy receiver that you want to have on your team, because when he hits, he's going to hit huge.
Yeah.
And when he misses, you're going to be frustrated, but you take the hits because of what he can give you.
Right.
And so the Petzig part of this is he's never had players at this caliber, as many good ones as he's going to have with Detroit. But you also look at, like, Michael Wilson was pretty damn awesome last year as a wide receiver, as a fantasy receiver. So the receivers are going to be fine. I just think if you just look at Jameson Williams, like, you have to just put him in the context and the guys I think that he belongs in. Like, I think Mike Evans is a good one because you're chasing touchdowns a little bit with Mike Evans. Obviously, yep. Evans has the potential to do more. Christian Watson's a good comparison, you know, just because we're expecting him to take a leap as the number one receiver in Green Bay. But you saw what he was capable of doing last year, sort of just as big play threat, was a top 20 wide receiver. But Jameson on another team would be amazing. To me, he's what Devontae Smith has been the last couple of years, like a good complimentary receiver, a guy that's going to have some big weeks and a guy that's just going to be average at times just because he's surrounded by so many good players. Like Jahmyr Gibbs, if we think he's going to be as good as he is going to hurt everybody else. If Sam Laporta takes a step forward or performs like he did in his rookie season, he's going to hurt Jameson Williams. The safe one to me is always going to be Amon-Ra St. Brown just because his numbers have been consistent. He's a guy that Jared Goff's going to lean on, and he plays at the part of the field where I think it's just easy to say these things are replicable no matter who's calling the plays.
Right.
I just think Jameson Williams is – you got to know what you're getting. If the pro Jameson Williams people want to take him a round or two earlier – and maybe Laporta gets hurt again, or maybe, God forbid, Amon-Ra St. Brown gets hurt. Like, it could be absolutely amazing. But there's just going to be weeks when everybody's healthy that he's just going to disappear.
Yep. All right. And also, keep in mind, his best game of the year scored 27 fantasy points against the Packers. Not only was Laporta out in that game, but Amon-Ra St. Brown left in the first quarter.
Right.
And Whit Jamo had a 37% target share that game. We know what he can do when he gets the targets. But he clearly benefited from Laporta being out last year, and then that one game he benefited from St. Brown being out.
I think, again, what have we been saying all offseason about Devontae Smith? Oh, my God, those three games when A.J. Brown was out, now he's got this opportunity to be this, that, and the other thing. Like, that's what we'd be saying if Amon-Ra St. Brown decided he wanted out of Detroit.
All right, this is from Books. Could you each name one bench player who could come out and have a crazy first game, making him nearly impossible to get off the waiver wire in week two? Non-injury related.
But somebody who's going to be good the rest of the season, or just someone who, because you could pull a big physical Bills wide receiver from last year who was amazing in week one, and then you know what happened after that.
So yeah, is that
I'm assuming you want somebody who can at least be good the rest of the way. If Heath were here, he would already be screaming Greg Dulcich, and I would co-sign that. Especially because he's taken on the Raiders in week one. That should be a good opportunity. And if there's a Raiders receiver you like, they're taking on the Dolphins in week one. One of those guys can end up being a good
but
guy.
But does he mean bench player, like bench player on his own team?
No.
I think he's meaning somebody that's just not getting drafted.
Yeah.
that would be the hot name that we would talk about off the waiver wire.
Yeah.
I don't remember who the Commanders play in week one. You can look it up, but Okonkwo might not get drafted in every league. His ADP is in round 12, so maybe it's a late pick.
I think you had two good scenarios, Dolchus or a Dolphins receiver. A Raiders receiver is good.
I could also see like...
But Naylor and Tucker are going to get drafted. Jack Besh is probably the one that...
Jack who?
Yeah, Besh.
Jack, Besh.
Adam, Jack who?
Yer Besh.
Thank you.
What?
I could see somebody like just somebody who's getting some hype this offseason is like Ryan Flannoy. You
know, I was
like,
going to say, right? I was just about to say Ryan Flannoy if he has
against
a big
the Giants week. In week one.
Yeah, it just goes off.
Oh, that would piss off everybody if he had a big game.
There's no way. I couldn't buy into it. Like, you know, with
also,
you know,
but it's got to be like 7 for 90 and a touchdown, and like he's getting 8 targets and they're just throwing the ball over the place.
There's also like a scenario where it's like, oh, well, we expect the Packers got rid of all these guys, Wicks and Dobbs. We expect it's just going to be Matthew Golden and Christian Watson. And then it's like one of their other guys goes off but in week one.
I think you're onto something there because we could see Mekhi Lemon dealing with an injury now and in Philly, like,
and then Wicks
Hollywood Brown.
Yeah, or Wicks. It's really those ambiguous receiver situations where I think it's going to happen.
I got my
but
guy.
The problem is that are you naming guys that are going to have a good week one? And then not be there.
Correct.
They're going to fool us in week 2, yes, 3 correct. All the way through.
No, I'm going to name Nicola, a guy that I think AC. I'm going to name a guy that I think could be the number 2 option on his team and better than the guy who's going like 60 picks ahead of him. Okay. I'm going to say Jalen McMillan. Because if Chris Godwin looks how he looked last year when he was coming back from a very, very serious injury. Chris Godwin was, in my opinion, a terrible football player last year. Like, just had no speed. His metrics were bad. He was barely targeted.
On that 80-yard touchdown that you saw.
Yeah, right? No, based on he ran 40 yards in like,
I think
like
Adam
5.5 seconds.
With this, by the way.
McMillan looked a lot better than
him.
McMillan,
it was such a weird year for him.
Obviously, I'm taking Godwin ahead of him, but... If McMillan, like if they were played under the same circumstances as last year, like let's say there was no Evans and Godwin was still that bad, McMillan would crush him.
Right.
If Godwin comes back to being himself, he could be one of the steals of the draft. But McMillan would be a guy.
I think that's the biggest flaw we have in fantasy. A lot of times we just rely on a player's name or what he's done in the past, not realizing like some of these injuries just completely reshape who they are moving forward as a player. Like he is Chris Godwin. That's his name. And he was something great. He's had multiple injuries. Is he still that player with this version of himself? Like that's something I think we miss all the time in fantasy.
Oh, that's a great call in the chat. Tank Dell.
Tank Dell's a good one.
He's the same guy.
I like the AD Mitchell call even better by Gridiron Gamer. Yep.
So I saw that one too. Mitchell has a good matchup in week one against Tennessee. There's a chance he could have a deep touchdown, but he's the guy I think about that fools us, that has a big week one and then
comes
back and just super inconsistent the rest of the way.
Oh, yeah.
All right, guys. Next question is from Steve Polychronopoulos.
What's the Besh and what's the Polychronopoulos?
Your Besh is
Tell him Polychronopoulos. Play Polychronopoulos on your road trip.
Okay, yeah, I'll play Steve Polychronopoulos for you.
You can tell him Besh
when we get in the car.
No, you're playing the other movie. He has to see.
It's a song.
The Polychronopoulos song is 3 minutes. He can get through that.
It's Sean Connery talking to Nick Cage in Nicolas Cage in The Rock.
He's called Nick Cage.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage in The Rock, where he's like, "Try my best." Because you're best. Losers whine about their best. And then I can't say the rest of the quote. All right. This one's from Steve. And Steve says, Dan loses all credibility if he doesn't know this one.
Oh, God.
Dear Sal, Ralph, Richie, and Phil.
Sal, are these Sopranos characters? No.
Hey.
I don't think so. Sal, Ralph, Richie, and Phil. These are Italians, obviously. Damn, this is devastating. I'm going to lose all my credibility. Not that I've read you. Like I've already lost it anyway on this show. I can't go any lower. Sal, Ralph. Oh, was it just Richie Aprile?
You're cheating. I mean, look how bad you're cheating.
He's not cheating.
I'm not cheating. Not cheating at all. No, I'm going through Sopranos characters in my head.
All right, it's Sopranos, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, good.
It looked like your hands went to the keyboard and you started looking up at the screen.
This is when the hands go to the keyboard.
At least you didn't say Game of Thrones.
You'd have to see this.
Grade the
trade. No, I knew it was Sopranos. I just had to get there. Richie Aprile.
Come on, here's a question.
We don't need the history of the Sopranos.
Grade the trade, Dynasty PPR, one quarterback league, give up Ricky Pearsall, get Isaiah Likely. Wide receiver is solid. My tight ends are weak. Grade the trade in Dynasty. Give up Pearsall, get Likely.
What were the settings? Did we get, is it tight end premium or anything like that or no?
It's PPR.
Is it straight one for one?
Yep.
I don't hate it. I don't love it.
Yeah, I think if you need a tight end, then it's fine.
And the thing is, Likely is signed to a decent sized contract. Pearsall is coming to the end of his rookie contract. And he's been injured the entire time. So I think I like it though. Pearsall is an interesting candidate this year for fantasy football redrafts. I don't know where I stand on him given the injuries, but I feel like there is some upside. Jacob kind of convinced me on it last show just because of how late he's being drafted. I'm kind of surprised by his ADP.
Yeah, I mean, especially when everyone on his team has, including him, has a lot of injury history. All right, break time. And, let's say hello to a friend in the chat. Who's Brad Mazey. He's a big CeeDee Lamb fan. He's also my tennis coach. He's going to help me kick Dan's ass Brad. In a month.
Yeah, we've talked to Brad. Look, Adam, you're in a lot of trouble. We'll see you in the practice match. I feel bad for you. You have a fake tendonitis injury that you're kind of... was using to kind of bake in, but I hope for your sake you get it closer so we have a more anticipated match. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, me too. Played last night, played doubles, was fine. We'll see about
you were singles. Fine from a health standpoint. Okay, good.
Yeah, singles, I don't know. All right, we'll be right back after this on Fantasy Football Today. Another one from a guy named Steve. A lot of Steves and Erics today. He has 2 points. Point number one, Adam's impressions of Dan are spot on. All right, I like that. And
they are pretty good.
give us your impression of Dan asking you for a ride to Philadelphia.
I mean, what am I going to do? I'm going to drive myself? I could easily just come here. I'm not really feeling it right now. But I'll try. Obviously, I'm going to spend a lot of time with him. So
yeah, we got to figure out a little car ride plan.
And by the way, Dan, I've gotten two listeners who have emailed and said they want to meet up with us.
I'm 100% down for that.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe.
Do you remember what happened the last time we met up with listeners?
Oh, when they agreed that, what was it? It was like something about Oreos.
One thing, somehow you found the I'm pretty sure you planted. You found the two people who agreed with you that the Oreo cookie is better than the cream. Really the worst. It's just unfathomably bad take. I don't even, a cram cracker-esque, just chocolate crappy,
I mean, you dry cracker. You've had two in the last month that are pretty bad too.
You're wrong about this, Dan. If there was a full bag of cookie and a full bag of cream,
I'd eat the cream. Yes,
you would get so sick, you'd vomit.
No, you're going to get just as sick from the Oreo cookie. They're both horrifically chemically. I shouldn't be saying any of this, but they're both bad for you.
All right,
both bad for you.
Let's get to the question here. How many guys from one NFL team are too many to draft? Is it unreasonable to take Hampton in round 2, McConkey at the 3-4 turn, Herbert in round 7, Quentin Johnston, and he says round 6, but I think you can get Johnston a little later than that, like round 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Gadsden in round 12. Jamie, you love the Chargers, but in general, how many players on one team are too many?
I think you got to be pretty sure that they're going to all hit or have a track record of hitting. So like the Bengals, if you want to take a chance on if you can still manage it at this point, but Jamar Chase, Chase Brown, T. Higgins, Joe Burrow, like if those guys all hit, you know what you're getting. I think if you can get the Cowboys, you'd be pretty happy about that, knowing that Dak and Lamb and Pickens and even Javonte Williams at this point have a chance to be, you know, pretty special. The Chargers could be awesome. I mean, you know, we have a lot of high expectations because Mike McDaniel there and the two tackles being back, but that's probably not a team, as much as I like them, that I'd want to be all in on, because you know, Justin Herbert gets hurt, it's completely downhill from there. And as we saw, even when the tackles get hurt, it was pretty downhill for them last season. But, you know, when it's one of those things, like when it works, it's going to be great. And when it doesn't, it's going to be awful, mostly because of injury.
And it's not going to work most of the time. I think you kneecap your upside when this happens, when you're taking too many players from the same team. Think about it. How often in a given year does the quarterback, the running back, two wide receivers, a tight end, et cetera, all have great weeks? And it doesn't happen very often.
But how often do all of your players have great weeks?
At least you give yourself a chance for it to happen when they're all on different teams.
But aren't you boosting?
I don't think there's a hard and fast number and there's no rule for it, but I think two is okay. It just depends on which two. And maybe before you make it happen, two players on the same team, go back and see if there's a track record, if there's a history.
Well, I mean, like
if you being good in the same week 6 times, out of the year.
The whole point is to go and get as many players from different
Go, Jamie. Teams. Go ahead.
You have to deal with the inconsistencies week to week, but like, you know, we just got an email about Jamison Williams and where he finished. So whether it was 12th overall or 19th overall points per game, total points, obviously Jared Goff was a borderline top 12 quarterback. Jahmyr Gibbs was the top three running back, and Amon-Ra St. Brown was a top five wide receiver. So if you had that offense at the end of the season, the numbers look great. The week to week part of it is probably going to be a little frustrating.
I think that if you make a good point though, like maybe you're capping your upside, but are you also boosting your floor? Because it's pretty unlikely that like none of those guys are going to have a good week, right? If you started three Lions,
I've got 5 weeks from last year where Goff was over 20 points per game, and both ARSB and JMO had at least 13 PPR points per game, and that I think that's rare. I don't think this happens very often.
Yeah,
I agree. I think it's a good point. Although if, I would say if you had Stafford, Puka, and Davante Adams, you're probably singing a different tune right now.
And Kyren,
yeah. I think the key is like look for teams that you think are going to have sneaky good offenses. You know, for example,
I don't think sneaky good. I think outstandingly good.
Yeah. Oh, no, but I mean based
and
on
concentrated
ADP,
targets,
but based on ADP, because there are three Cowboys players going in the top 36, so that's expensive. Whereas the Chargers are cheap.
But you can make that work, though. You could take Lamb at the end of round one and just have to reach for Pickens in round two, and then you're taking Javonte Williams round three and Dak Prescott round five or six.
But that's so much more draft capital than if you were doing that with the Chargers.
Yeah, I've got we know how many weeks?
I mean, but you're still going Hampton round two and McConkey round three, and then you still have to probably go get in early on Herbert and
UJ. It's still a lot less.
It's better. Yeah, for sure it's better.
Go ahead, Dave.
How many weeks did both Rams wide receivers have 13 or more and Stafford have 20 plus?
No, I would say at least seven.
I was going to say seven or eight.
Six.
Yeah, Devontae got hurt. That's part of why.
Right, sure. So it's a high percentage of the time when all three of them were on the field.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still...
That's also in a crazy outcome where Stafford...
That's good, like too. Like that's an outlier.
But you're also talking about, though... Comparing that to how many weeks did your quarterback, your number one receiver, and your number two receiver also hit those numbers?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. At the end of the day, you just get the best players.
Sure.
Just think you're capping your touchdown upside no matter what if you take them all from the same team.
Agreed.
It's the same reason they used to tell you in fantasy. It was like a tried and true rule. Don't draft the quarterback and the receiver from the same team. People have kind of gone away from that because we have so many bad offenses in the NFL. You kind of have to. But back in the day, that was always the rule of thumb.
All right. Oh, you saw that tweet. You quote tweeted it from Dwayne McFarland, I believe, about the amount of, what was it, like the
250-yard passing, average passing yards teams per game. Or I'm sorry. That's,
how many were there?
So there were 17 just 5 years ago. Last year, 2 years ago, for the first time, it dipped under double digits. There were just nine teams that averaged 250 yards passing game. And last year was eight teams that averaged 250 yards passing. That's not even a lot. We're not even talking about 300 or 275. 250 is nothing.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it was that many. I went and looked. Maybe I had it wrong because there were five. There were four.
His stat might have been wrong.
His stat, I think, was right until last year. There was only four last year. Rams, Cowboys, Lions, Patriots. Did you say the kickoffs? Yeah.
The kickoff rule.
The kickoff's part of it, Jamie. Yeah.
It's
a lot
of
people
apply. But I think it's
how they play defense.
It's just teams can't pass the ball. Straight up.
You know what, though? It probably depends on what you're looking at, because when I look at yards, it includes sacks. You got to look at the gross passing yards.
Oh, no, I doubt
yards.
This included that. Yeah.
I could be wrong about that. But
not including sacks.
250. Seven last year. Seven.
Okay.
And the year before that was only also seven. In 2023 was 11. Right. So... why shouldn't I double up on the teams that actually are going to throw for 250 or more yards? It's not the worst strategy. And
it's a better strategy.
Those teams last year were the Rams, Cowboys, Lions, Cardinals, Patriots, Bengals, 49ers.
Uh-huh. But you said double up. Difference between doubling up, tripling up, quadrupling.
Going all in, yeah.
Yeah. All right. This is, I remember my what I wanted to do. Was somehow draft Chase, Brown,
say that all last
Higgins,
year.
Burrow.
Yeah. Thomas did that.
Yeah, unfortunately, Burrow got hurt.
Right.
You would have won the league if Burrow had stayed
healthy. Oh, they were really big for the playoffs, too.
You would have won the league. All right, here's Brian in Charlotte. Subject is Jacob Gibbs. Jahmyr Gibbs offensive line in 2025 versus 2026.
Yep.
Dave, we were talking about this on a previous show, and this Lions fan, Brian, wanted people to know that in his mind, he says, Lions fans and O-line ball knowers expect the Lions to be much better at 4 of 5 spots on the offensive line this year. Penei Sewell will move to his left tackle spot, which will be an upgrade, but a downgrade at right tackle. But he thinks that overall, other spots on the line will be better this year than it was last year. So I think we talked about like what could go wrong for Gibbs, and he's saying the O-line wasn't really that good last year. It's going to be better this year. What do you think, Dave?
I think both of their offensive lines have question marks. I'm especially concerned. Well, I'm concerned with both, but I've got a little bit more faith in the Lions offensive line than I do the Falcons offensive line. I don't like the depth of the Falcons offensive line, especially since they just added 2 cast-offs from Kansas City, one of whom had so many false start penalties, Juwan Taylor. It was comical. And so I don't know if it's a discernible edge to give the offensive line, you know, a better mark in Atlanta than it is for Detroit.
Yeah. Dave is referencing the conversation that started this that created this email, which was comparing the Falcons to the Lions. But
right. And you want to know about there being less weapons.
No, I want to know, is the Lions offensive line going to be better than it was last year?
Yes.
I think
I'm going to say yes.
I think to Dan's previous point about like Chris Godwin, like sometimes we think of names more so than what they are right now. So like Taylor Decker, for example, may not have been the same player, but you hear his name, you're like, oh wow, he's been awesome. So like they have to be much better. So this could be one of those situations where like, and it also goes back to Petzing, like they're changing things for a reason, you know? So they're changing their personnel up front because they weren't thrilled with how it looked last year at times. They're changing their play caller because it didn't go well last year. And so I think that speaks to, okay, how do we protect Jared Goff? How do we run the ball a little bit better? Like this is, you know, to go back to tying yourself to one team, like the Lions could be amazing once again. And I think the offensive line's going to be a big part. Yep.
And that's the thing. If you look at his history, Drew Petzig, he had really bad quote unquote talent on the Cardinals offensive line, and they're generating massive big plays in the run game. I think I saw something with their explosives was up there in top 4 in the league, despite having James Conner, who's not the most explosive back per se. And more importantly, just not a lot of talent on the offensive line. That's scheme. You know, that's scheme related. And we saw that with Jacksonville last year as well. Not a lot of talent on the offensive line. Great run blocking scheme generated a lot of big plays in the run games at times. So you take that, you bring it to the Lions, and you add Cade Mays, who in my mind was one of the big reasons the Carolina Panthers run game turned around the second half of last season. I really don't even know why they let him go. I thought that was one of the oddest things of the entire free agent, like, period, to let Cade Mays go if you're the Panthers. And then the Lions snatched him up immediately, and they fixed their biggest flaw last year, which was losing Frank Ragnow to retirement and trying to put Graham Glasgow in at center. So I'm with the emailer, the listener here. I think he's right. The Lions have actually made a markedly improvement just from a scheme standpoint and from a talent standpoint. While the Falcons are the opposite for me. Not only have question marks about the personnel, more so I have question marks about them losing Ledbetter, like getting away from that wide zone scheme that was clearly like they were winning based on scheme in the run game. And now, in my mind at least, and they have some good players on that line, but not to the Lions level. And now you're bringing in a brand new run scheme, and I have some concerns about that for sure with Atlanta.
Okay, last question is from Randy in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, and he says, hey, Randy, Ed, Harvey.
That's Pacific Northwest, right?
That is, yeah, Pacific Northwest.
I still think Northern California is the Pacific Northwest, and I stand by that.
Yeah, San Francisco is definitely not the Pacific Northwest.
No, because when drive the Pacific into North, West. Have you ever done the drive down from Seattle and the coast and Oregon, you get through to Northern California and you're into like the redwoods and all those like that awesome, you know, the trees. That's Northern California. When I get down to LA, that's a totally different landscape. That's
right.
Right? Isn't there something?
Yeah, but that's not, that's like Northwest.
I see those trees. I know I'm in the Northwest.
Yeah, Jamie, I do. Yeah,
you don't see the Hollywood sign up there. You just see a bunch of lumberjacks.
You just feel like you're in nature. You feel like you're in the beautiful part of the Pacific Northwest. You don't feel like you're down into that nitty gritty LA.
Here's what I think should happen. Adam, you should let Dan drive when you pick him up, whoever's car, but no GPS, no maps, no nothing.
You know how screwed we would be?
Figure it out. Oh my gosh.
We'd be so screwed. You,
they're
man.
Not letting him drive my car, and I don't really want him to drive anywhere.
I'll drive. I'll drive. I'll drive either both ways or one leg. I don't care. I like driving.
Maybe I will let you drive. Why wouldn't I let you drive?
Yeah. I mean, we could do either
one. You were so offended yesterday, Dan, that you didn't offer to drive.
You should have offered.
I was going to offer just something you don't offer right away. You can offer when you get into the car. Yeah, hey, I'll do the leg home. You know, you don't have to just, it's not a pre-offer.
No, I think it's a pre-offer. I think it's absolutely a pre-offer.
Like, Adam, listen, I've why. Done a lot here.
Listen.
All right, here's what
happened.
I'm
going to drive out of my way to my parents so like you can have a shorter drive there. I'm getting us I'm getting us a court time at a nice club to play at on Friday. Like, what more do you want? You want me to, at the time, offer to drive? Yes, I would offer.
Because I'll tell you, you don't understand. I have to, depending on whether or not I'm driving all the way, I have to take a different car, which means moving car seats around. So you need
why? To just let Dan sit in the car seat.
No, it's about
I'm willing to drive. Let's just put it out there. I will drive either or both ways. Yeah.
Your right, car or my car?
Here's that step. You guys have to no GPS from Dan's
get
house.
Get the hell out of here, Jamie.
No.
This is you got to pick up one hitchhiker.
This is ridiculous, Jamie. I will say this, though, Adam. If we don't leave that city in the days we're there without having one of the cheesesteaks that we need to have, which I know you're not a huge fan of this kind of food, but you're going to have to step up.
What the hell are you talking about? About a fan of cheesesteaks?
Adam, I went to a diner with you, which had the greatest menu in the history of the world. I had a sandwich that had like mozzarella sticks, chicken cutlet, vodka sauce, and you had steamed broccoli and like chicken. Literally, like steamed broccoli and chicken
teriyaki
and
rice bowl. It came with broccoli. It was delicious. You'll be 40 one day too.
Dave, you won't if you be able went to this diner and way. You saw what was on the options that were on that menu, and you saw somebody order broccoli chicken bowl, you
what's the name of the diner?
The Mount Kisco Diner. It's the best.
I think
diner
it's honestly the best diner I've ever been to.
Yeah, it is.
I'm looking up their menu.
Look up their menu. You're going to see about 15 things you'd rather have before you get to the rice chicken
you
bowl.
You wait till
I'm
you're 40.
I'm going to say I'm going to have. I'd rather have everything. Than
pretty much
rice
everything
chicken.
On the
it
menu
was
is
a
better
chicken
than that rice
teriyaki
chicken bowl.
Rice bowl. I didn't order steamed. Hey, can I have some steamed broccoli on. With chicken?
That broccoli did not look fried.
Adam, you go there often, though, right?
Yeah, I go there like once or twice a month, probably.
So it's understandable that he would get something that is a little different. Than
exactly.
Maybe
if I were a tourist.
No, but Adam orders that every time, he told me, or his wife.
No, I don't. I usually get the chicken parm sub, which is fattening and greasy and delicious with French fries. It's a big, you know, that's what I get. It's amazing.
They have a section on their menu dedicated to deep fried wraps.
Wraps. Yeah. I had to try a deep fried wrap.
Which one did you get? The chicken cutlet?
But it had so much on it. I don't know. It was insane. And I ate the
Frankie
thing.
G wrap has breaded chicken cutlet and angel hair Alfredo wrapped in deep fried, served with fries.
Dude, they have
that's
tacos
a heart attack.
Where the taco shell are like fried chicken patties.
Yeah. They got a lot of stuff going on there. And then Adam got the chicken teriyaki rice bowl. I mean, right, either way, you're going to have a Philly cheesesteak with me, and we're going to have to go to the Knicks. I have to see if you feel the way I feel about the Knicks. I think it's the best sandwich in America.
Oh, I thought it was the Knicks. I was like, what?
No, it's called the Knicks.
Oh.
In our Reading Terminal, the Knicks roast pork.
You can't judge sandwiches after your Publix take.
No, the Publix take was really good. I never said it was a bad place. Publix is solid. You know, you go there, you get some, like, it's better than like a regular deli or ShopRite type sandwich you're going to get. But it doesn't compare to a Fiori's. It doesn't compare to these delis on the East Coast. And it really just doesn't. Like, I want homemade chicken cutlet. I don't want these like chicken tenders that have been frozen for months and then they defrost them. You know, these preservative chicken tenders, you get at Publix. Oh,
they
the pub sub. I'm going to get a chicken
what
tenders and buffalo
about?
Sauce.
Oh, God.
I could do that at home, dude. I'll buy a bag of Purdue and I'll buy some buffalo sauce.
They make them there. What are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about, man?
They make those buffalo chicken tenders there, fresh?
Yes.
Daily?
Yes.
The fryer is 2 feet away from the counter.
No, but I mean, they're just breaded. They're not breaded daily. Like, right. I'm talking about an Italian deli where you get chicken breast. Let's put it in the breadcrumbs.
Let's answer this last question here.
No, like this is a freshly made per day.
Let's answer this last question from Randy. He says, "Dear Randy, Ed, Harvey, and John." I never would have gotten this.
The Cowboys defenders?
Yes.
Randy White, Ed Too Tall Jones, Harvey Martin. I'm blanking on John. Gil would kill me.
John Dutton.
John Dutton. Yes. Okay.
Who is the real RB2 in Dallas?
Good question.
I'd love to know. I know who the coaches want it to be. I just don't know if that's who it's going to be. They want it to be Jaden Blue. They want a speed element.
I don't know if it's going to be Dan Blue.
But I don't know if it's going to be him.
I think it could be somebody they sign. I'm standing.
Yeah, it wouldn't be. Like, these are teams where Kamara or Connor make so much sense.
Yeah, right.
But it's Cowboys. I think if they went there, how much would it sour you, if at all, on Javonte?
A little bit.
I think if it's Connor, I'd be a little sour. If it's Kamara, I'm not so sure I'd be soured.
I mean, Connor and Kamara.
From a roster standpoint, forget about fantasy. From a roster standpoint, like, that's the type of move. These are the type of players like a team like that should go get, because they're going to be cheap and it just makes you a little bit better.
You want to hear a stat I'm about to give on the next podcast we're about to record, which is the wide receivers round 7 through 9. Jaden Reed has 6 carries over the last 3 years, which is his career. 6 carries of 20 or more yards. Jaden Reed. That's twice as many as Alvin Kamara in the last 3 years. Oh, man. And Jaden Reed has 34 carries.
You love bringing up this Kamara lack of explosive
actually
run stuff.
One of the biggest takeaways from the research I've done the last 24 hours in preparation for this show is that Jaden Reed has been one of the most efficient players in football. He is second in fantasy points per target among wide receivers over the last 3 seasons. He's so good per route run. He averages 9.1 yards per carry on 34 carries. You know, obviously you think get more targets, more like the efficiency will go down, but there's a huge case. I wasn't even thinking about drafting Jaden Reed. When you see the numbers, get the man on the field more, things could really change. He could be pretty impactful for
fantasy. They paid him like it.
Right. Yeah. I think it's going to happen.
Yeah. Pretty cool stuff. All right, Dan, thank you. I'll see you in a few hours.
Yeah. It's going to be a good time.
I think I'm going to let you drive.
Okay. I'm down.
I'll be really excited about that.
Breaded chicken, honey, sriracha, drizzled mac and cheese, French fries, and chipotle mayo wrapped and deep fried and served with fries.
That's the Mount Kisco Diner.
All right. One hitchhiker each way.
Oh gosh.
Wow. Can you imagine if we picked up a hitchhiker?
I saw like a hitchhiker. I saw like a probably lady in her like 60s
hitchhiking
yesterday.
Wow.
And I thought this would be the only scenario where I would pick up a hitchhiker. Like this, she's probably not going to kill me.
There are no scenario where I'm picking up a hitchhiker.
All right, go find her and take her to Philadelphia.
Like she had her thumb up, this woman?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Yeah, it's weird. You don't see hitch. That's the first
time I've seen that. I haven't seen them in so long.
If one hitchhiker and no GPS, and if you end up in the trees, you know you're in the
best. I'm going to have Adam eating the worst food in the world to get him prepped for that Friday match.
No, I think I found it, though. Chopped cheese, chopped prime burger, chopped fries, chopped onion rings, mozzarella sticks, brown gravy, mayo drizzle on a garlic hero.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds good.
That's right. They can't just give it to you on bread.
I think I ordered that one. I actually think I ordered that one.
No, you didn't order that one. You ordered something similar. You ordered a chicken parm sub with vodka sauce, a fried ravioli on garlic bread.
Yes.
I have a sandwich called the Terminator. Yeah. The Terminator. It's going to kill you.
All right, everyone. We'll talk to you later.
Chicken fingers and cheesesteak and mozzarella sticks on same sandwich.
So this is in some ways they copied the grease trucks and Rutgers. I don't know if you guys know about that.
Yeah, no, it's obviously they copied something from New Jersey, 100%.
Okay, look it up. Look it up. Look up the grease trucks and Rutgers. That's what they were doing. They were doing subs with like chicken tenders, cheesesteak, mozzarella sticks. They're loading.
All right, so your three goals for this trip are one hitchhiker, no GPS, and go get cheesesteaks in Philly.
Not just cheesesteaks, but the Knicks roast pork.
There you go.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Take the hitchhiker to the cheesesteak place.
Definitely going
to
get some good food. Have a good day, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow or whenever on Fantasy Football Today.
Paramount Podcasts.
Where are you sending us?
This is a fun one.
Streaming July 23rd on Paramount Plus, the hit series Star Trek Strange New Worlds returns.
You are facing the finest crew in Starfleet.
Boldly go one step closer.
Any of these missions could be on us.
To where it all began.
We've seen a lot of strange new worlds, but we'll never see something like this.
Star Trek Strange New Worlds, new season streaming July 23rd exclusively on Paramount Plus.